Diamond Heart 7, August 29th, 2009, morning session. Missing first 5 minutes of the talk.
Their emptiness that comes about with a feeling of lack, a feeling that there's something missing. And of course, there is something missing. What's missing? Yeah, your connection with true nature. True nature didn't go anywhere, but what's missing is the contact with it, the connection with it. So holes refer to any lack or any sense of something's missing or any emptiness where something of ourselves got lost. And what we lost was consciousness. We lost consciousness of our essence. So the thing is, when we are not aware of our essence, and we really don't pay attention and practice being aware of it, essence stops manifesting in our consciousness, and it's lost to us. So how do holes come about? Well, in a general sense, we can say they come about because in our early childhood, things happen to us. And we've been looking at that with each of the Latayev. We looked at what happened relative to our strength that made our strength go away and anger get substituted. We've been looking at what happened that made our tenderness, our open-heartedness, our sweetness go away. So this isn't totally new. It's just coming at it from another angle and a bit more head-on, so to speak. So in our childhood, our early days, our first 4 or 5 years, things happen to us. For example, let's say that your father or your mother promises you something. We're going to go to Disneyland, or we're going to go to Golden Gate Park and see the flowers, or we're going to go to the zoo and see the animals, or we're going to grandma's house, or we're going to have spaghetti for dinner. Whatever it is, the parent promises something, and what does the child do? Yeah, you feel how the child is taking that in. It represents that inside. Oh yeah, spaghetti. Oh yeah, teddy bears. I want to see the bears. And it gets excited. It gets involved. And then let's say that something comes up. Parent is doing the best they can, but God knows there's life presents all kinds of things, and the parent has to say, "I'm sorry, we can't go today. We can't do that." What happens in the child? Collapse? Okay, one possibility.
Disappointment.
So the collapse may be in the heart that says, oh. And then often there's a reaction that says, so I'm not gonna want to do anything anymore because it hurts too much when my heart gets disappointed. So right there, the joy might be cut off. Right there, the happiness of aliveness may be cut off. Or another possibility, for example, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds are very curious about mother's purse, right? They love to go in mother's purse. So the child goes in, finds this thing, plays with it, pulls it, it opens up. Ah, it's red. And some of you have done this, obviously, or seen this. And so they fiddle around with it and start to do things with it, like on the carpet or on the chair or on the wall. and it's pretty, so they do more. And they're having a wonderful time. It's beautiful, and they're into it, and it's exciting, and they love it. So the soul is open and experiencing and having a good time. Nothing wrong with that. But then mother's there. And what is mother doing? Oh, my God. Yeah, she sees what's going on, and there's horror, or there's fury. She knows the job is going to be to get that lipstick off those things, which the child has no consciousness of at all. So she's mad, and she yells, "Stop that! Or what are you doing?" And the child is startled. Something gets cut off. Maybe she grabs your arm and shakes you. "Don't do that anymore. Come over here." So you get pulled and pushed in your body, and your body starts to respond and react. So something about wanting something that you like, or maybe it's doing something you're having fun with, or wanting to do something that looks good to you. Some things get taken in our representational world, and we begin to say, "No, no, no, we can't do that. That won't work. Because it's too scary. It hurts too much when she gets like that." Or it could be the father gets like that. So there's a cutoff. The red may be cut off in that situation. So something about wanting what you want and going for what you want, that gets tamped down, cut off from your natural strength, which is a quality of essence. Then there's actual punishment. I'll use an example from a student of mine who had a memory in her work of being about three to four years old, and they lived in a small town up near, like around Placerville someplace, small town. And there was a railroad tracks that ran by the backyard. So this day, the mom let her out in her backyard by herself, and she sees these shiny tracks. She doesn't know what they are, but they're fascinating. So she walks out toward them, and she starts following the railroad tracks, and she's having a wonderful time. She feels confident. She feels grown up. She feels her body going along the tracks. She has no idea where she's going, and that's fine. And so the openness is there again, and the sense of her own will, her own doing with a sense that she's the doer. And then she hears her mother's voice behind her, and she hears the fear in that voice. And when she turns around, she sees the look on her mother's face. She knows this is not good. You know that sinking feeling inside when you're bad? So mother comes up and spanked the living daylights out of her and yelled at her. I'm sure because the mother was terrified. You know, that would be a life-threatening situation to a three-year-old if a train came. And marches her home, puts her in a room all by herself, and when dad comes home, dad spanks her. So she gets a punishment that says to her, "Don't do what makes you feel strong and of yourself, you know, doing what your impulse and your desire and your will, your desire to explore." So those kinds of conflicts between the environment and the child, those kinds of traumas in some cases, create situations in which there's a cutoff. And the feeling of essence, whatever the specific quality of essence is cut off, and it actually leaves a hole in your consciousness, in your soul. A literal empty hole. There's another thing besides those things, And that is that when your ones that you're around a lot, you know, your family, the ones you love, the ones you play with, if they're not seeing your essential qualities, if they don't respond to the light in you or the intelligence or the love, to the qualities that actually naturally arise from your essence, then it seems like they're not real. And you stop paying attention to them, and you start orienting to what the outside people point to. And you get oriented to other people and the outer world, and actually lose touch with these feelings, and they get cut off. Because as I said, when we don't pay attention to essence, it stops manifesting in our consciousness, and it's lost to us. So, as you probably can imagine from your own experience, when there's a loss of a quality of essence, there's anxiety. The consciousness knows something went missing, something got cut off, and there's tremendous anxiety. So what do we normally do, even to this day, when we feel anxious? We try to get rid of it, don't we? We try to get away from it. So there are immediate instinctual reactions in our soul to try to cover up or get rid of the whole. So I'm going to tell you how this happens and some ways that the soul devises to cover up a hole. And in that process, what gets created is your personality. It's actually the process of creating the self you take yourself to be and the personality. So the first way that we can cover up a hole is to pretend it's not there. And children do pretend easily, but adults do too. You might say something that hurts my feelings, and if I don't want to be vulnerable at that moment, and maybe especially to you, I cover it up. I pretend you didn't hurt me. It's fine. Well, that starts very young. And the filling of the hole then will be with pretending that you've got the quality that was cut off, pretending that you've got whatever was lost. So, for example, let's say after you were punished, you felt bad, felt like you were bad, and you really lost any sense of self-esteem or value. You felt bad. Well, you would find a way to fill that hole with something that makes you feel valuable. It might make you might be feeling useful, you might be feeling creative, something though that gives you a sense of I'm a good person, I'm okay. Now these are very subtle, and it's not something where you're thinking these things. This is going on a very subtle level and very instinctually. Let's say the quality that's lost is love. Well, you might fill that by pretending it wasn't lost and then becoming very loving. You know how some children will crawl up in your lap and put their arms around your neck and they know you love it. So they become very loving in an attempt to get the love that was lost. So pretending that you didn't lose it and then filling it with exactly that quality is one way. But it has to be precise. You can't just put any old quality in there. The intelligence in the soul is to pretend to get exactly the quality that was lost. So, for example, let's say you lost the quality of the red, you know, the feeling of strength to be who you are. Well, then you might find yourself getting involved in things that are challenging, competitions, in finding ways to do things that show and prove that you're strong. And they can be playful things. You might climb trees. You might have Legos and build whole cities. This isn't pointing to things that are bad. It's pointing to things that are used by the soul to fill a hole and get the quality that got cut off so that you don't experience the anxiety and the emptiness that's there. When you win a competition, you might feel strong. And that is the way you want to feel. It's precise. Or if you love someone, you have that feeling inside of loving. So we like to find people we can love. We also like to find people who love us. So that's another way of filling holes. Besides pretending it wasn't lost, we find a person or persons, can be a whole group of friends or community, we find a person that fills our holes. So it might be a person that we can love. And when we love that person loves us back. So I fill your holes and you fill my holes. And when I love you and you love me, I feel appreciated. I feel valued. I feel wanted. I feel open. I feel generous. I feel the qualities of my being that got lost. And the feeling is one that is very pleasurable. You feel complete, you feel full. So we all tend to fill our holes with people. That's another way. And the thing about it is, this filling of the holes is an unconscious process. As I said before, we're not thinking about this and calculating. This is going on underneath. And so, you don't say to yourself, oh, I'm in love with this person because they're filling my holes. You say, I'm in love with this person because it's my soulmate. I'm in love with this person because I'm interested in what they're interested in. I'm in love with this person because they see me in a way that makes me feel good. And I see them, and we understand each other. So it seems very intimate, and it seems like the love of our lives. And who doesn't want that? And notice, society really thrives on our filling each other's holes. That's really the setup. You find Mr. Right, you find Ms. Right, you live happily ever after. That's the story we get from Cinderella and all kinds of myths that are given to us as children. We look for somebody who's the right mate. And society is definitely on board with that one. Another offshoot of that, which I'm sure you'll recognize, is the advertising game. What does that do? Tells you what you need, right? And then how to fill it. And how to fill it in the best way, the cheapest way, or the most whatever way. And it's ongoing. There's always more emptiness to fill. So is anybody beginning to feel kind of sick to their stomach or a little? Yeah, I can see some of you are getting a little woozy looking, so take a breath. Yeah, this is not easy information to recognize, because most of us live our whole lives believing in this as reality. And if we don't find somebody to love and be loved by, you know, we feel that lack. So take some breath, feel your arms and legs, keep sensing your body, see if you can feel some presence. So basically, when we get a clue about whether or not it's filling holes, because, you know, when you love somebody, it isn't always filling a hole. You can genuinely love somebody. So I'm not saying that. But one little clue that when we're filling holes is if the person changes their way and wants to do something different or go someplace else or make some kind of change in reality for them, that affects us. And that feeling of appreciation or being appreciated, that feeling of value, those holes then aren't going to get filled. And this is very uncomfortable. That tells you that you were dependent on that person to fill your holes. And it's painful. Let's take the situation of a divorce or a death. Sometimes I've had students say to me, I feel like my guts dropped out. My belly is totally eviscerated. It's empty. There's no guts. It's painful. And what we get to see then, that the fullness in us came because the other person was there and filling not just one hole usually, it's many holes. So we'll start to see one hole and then we'll begin to see other holes. So when we depend on somebody, if something changes or if somebody dies or goes away or wants something different, it really rocks our world. And that's our clue. In that case, we are really not relating to the other person as a separate, unique individual. We're relating to them as part of ourselves, and an important part of ourselves, because it, that person and the way that person behaves to us fills our holes. This, of course, is painful and brings up more anxiety when change comes about. So there's a couple of more ways to fill our holes, which I'll point to, and then I think you may discover some for yourself. So putting something in place of what was lost, of substituting, could say. So, for example, some people substitute work or creativity or projects that they volunteer in or get involved with. Some people substitute getting involved with other people's troubles. You know how that goes? Other people's dramas. That fills holes. Now, when we get involved with other people's dramas, there's often a lot of emotion. So I want to point to another thing that's substituted, and that's pseudo-feelings, or what we call emotions. In spiritual work, we use the term emotions specifically when we want to refer to pseudo or false feelings. So let me give you an example. Let's say that one of your holes is a hole of value. And we know that value is inherent in essence. But when you're cut off from that inherent value, then you react by some way trying to get value from the outside. So possibly you start feeling superior about yourself. You look and find ways that you're better than other people. Right? And we believe these things. And that feeling of superiority is a real feeling, but it's a false feeling. I mean, real in the sense that you actually feel it, but it's false in the sense that it isn't a real feeling. It's a replacement feeling for the feeling of value that's lost from essence. So it's usually covering up the feeling of emptiness or something's missing or a feeling of being inferior. But that's not a real feeling either. That's also a reaction to the loss of a quality of essence. Let's say somebody says something to you and it makes you feel insulted. It makes you feel like they don't get that you're superior. And so you get angry, right? You get insulted. Your feelings get hurt. All of those emotions are replacements. They're reactions when somebody doesn't get your false feeling and so hurt, anger, jealousy, are all ways of we think we're feeling something. It actually, we do feel something, but they're not real feelings. They're pseudo feelings. They're feelings in reaction to the loss of a quality of essence. And they're substitutes. They take the place for the real thing. So another way is to distract ourselves. We get very busy. We get very involved. We get very popular. We belong to good causes. And those actions, those activities, really bring things to us that fill holes. We might feel useful. We might feel contributing. We might feel socially conscious. Things that make us feel like a good person and full. And then the last one I'll mention is denial. We just deny that anything was lost, anything's lacking. You look for a hole, you simply don't find one. You just don't find emptiness. No problem. Nothing's gone. It's denial. It's a very strong and early defense mechanism. And as you can see, when I give you these examples, these happen automatically. It's not something you're thinking about. It's instinctual, and the personality has an automaticity to it, and it's habit, and it functions for you without your thinking. So things we've worked with already, like hatred, sadness, anger, jealousy, all of these are in the category of emotions that take the place of real feeling of essence. Our everyday concerns point the way, as do these emotions. Now, when you feel these emotions, it's important that you begin to get, oh, wait a minute here. I've got some kind of reaction going on. Maybe there's a hole. But other things can give us a little pointer too, like, for example, the concerns of our everyday world, like, I don't have a PhD, and so I'm basically inadequate. I don't have the right body type. I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too whatever. I don't know how to play tennis, and so I really can't succeed in the business world. I don't know how to do relationship because my mother and father never really related to me. I don't feel confident in myself because I don't make enough money. I don't have the right job. So these can be everyday kind of concerns. Or I don't like it when my best friend gets interested in somebody else and wants them to come along on our journeys. Any of these things are just typical human concerns, but they can all point to something that was lost of our essence. And this is complex. The things they point to are parts of our identities, our object relations, and you already know how complex they are. We've already started working on them. So as we go into this material, we're going to be seeing the way our identities are built on filling up holes. They're built in reaction to the loss of our essence, specific qualities of our essence. So sometimes, you know, we think, okay, I'll get a new job, or I'll write a book and get published. I'll have a child. I'll make more money. Whatever. Part of how the ego activity reacts is by getting busier, doing more, getting more creative, filling the holes. We want a deeper sense of meaning, so we take up spiritual work. This could be a way of filling a hole. Everything can be a way not to feel what that precious essence that we lost is like. So this weekend is a beginning. I can't stress strongly enough how important it is that you take what you learned this weekend, and every weekend actually, and really try to refer to it every day. Maybe 10 minutes before you go to sleep at night, after you get the kids in bed, or after you make all your phone calls, or handle all your emails. After everything gets done, and you say to yourself, the 10-minute club. I'm in the 10-minute club. 10 minutes for me to take a look at my day and see what I can see about what happened, how I felt, what did I do, what choices did I make. Because this is opening up now a deeper exploration to take us back to getting our essential qualities to be what are there all the time. So we have real feelings. And this goes on for years in the work because we keep deepening. So I just want to say, don't expect this is a quick fix and this is the weekend to handle the holes. Unfortunately, they get more interesting and more creative and more playful all the time. But there's basic things that you'll begin to be able to recognize. Okay, so we're going to do an exercise. And there are two repeating questions, each for 15 minutes. And I'd like you to start very slowly by sensing your arms and legs, taking a moment to look at each other, really coming into your own body, feeling your sits bones, feeling your cough, connecting with yourself before you do anything else. Really make sure you're there. And start with something that you may already know in answering the question. That's fine. And then, once they're spoken out, just take your time and see what comes up. Because what you want to do is let the question invite something out of your unconscious. which is where all this stuff has been waiting for you. So the first question is, tell me a way. Tell me a way you try to fill your holes. Tell me a way you try to fill your holes. And remember, it doesn't have to make sense. This is a beginning. Then after both of you do that, your second question is, what's right about avoiding experiencing your holes? What's right about avoiding experiencing your holes? Okay, so that'll take an hour. That'll be 12:30 and let's say a 10 minutes for a bathroom break. So let's be back at 12:40. I know there are still people waiting for the bathroom. And we're mostly back, so let's see what we discovered. Let's talk about what's coming up. Yes, Jim. Who's running the mic? Here we go. Over here.
My question is around avoidance. What's coming up for me is can I actually make a decision that I'm not gonna, that I'm going to experience a hole? You know,
can
like
you make a decision which will create the experience of having a hole.
Saying I'm not going to avoid anymore, or there's like a series of beliefs. For me, I'm unearthing beliefs.
Like, for example.
Well, I don't want to find out that I'm not lovable, or I don't want things to be true. And it seems contrary to who I've taken myself to be to do that.
So you've taken yourself to be lovable, and you don't want to find out that you're not. Is that one
or I'm good, or you know? So I'm not exactly sure because I don't feel certain that I'm not lovable. But sometimes I feel not likable when it comes up when I get close to that. But it also feels like I can't. Like I'm not in charge.
Yes.
In some way. And so avoidance
gets tricky.
Yeah.
So do you feel like a felt sense that you're loving or lovable or whatever word we use? No, you don't have that felt sense.
No.
Okay. Can you think of a situation in which you do feel that you're lovable or loving?
Sometimes with my private teacher, when I've opened up some space has opened up inside, and it feels like I'd like to get to know this place, or you know, like there's a little, you know, sense of a little awe, but it's felt.
Felt
that I'd like to experience myself in this way more.
Okay. Like so there's a recognition that this is something of yourself.
And I didn't know.
That you didn't know, and that it's not your conventional, familiar self.
Right.
And you're interested to know that more.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that case, it sounds like you feel you're not cut off from true nature. In that moment, something deeper, something new, something unusual is being connected with, and you're interested in it.
It feels more like I'm ignorant of it.
You're ignorant?
Like, I guess I'm avoiding as well, but I'm also ignorant.
Right. See, I don't hear avoidance there. I hear that you were in an inquiry with your teacher, and in that situation, this comes up, and you recognize, oh, something's here that's different.
Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, the teacher is sitting in presence. Yeah? So there's presence in that field. The field is one in which you're consciously looking into with interest in the inquiry. So you're present in the moment to yourself and to you with your teacher. So then something can happen. Something unfolds or something reveals itself. And that may eventually take you to a feeling of emptiness and or a hole. But that in itself is inquiring and letting presence touch your soul so that it reveals, the soul reveals something. I wouldn't see that as avoidance.
Okay.
Anytime there's presence and you can experience something of it, that's not a whole. That's an aspect of true nature touching your soul. Yeah? And in inquiry, we're opening ourselves. We're not avoiding. We're saying, let me look. Let me look into this. Let me feel into this. And as you do that over and over, it may bring you closer and closer to a whole because you're inviting what's in the unconscious to come up. So
maybe it's, for me, it's to look at areas of my life where maybe I avoid.
Yeah, I don't hear you avoiding. I hear you do an inquiry. Where do you avoid?
Relationship.
Okay. And like, what is it, how do you avoid in relationship?
By not engaging, mostly.
Yeah, you're kind of holding back. Or, yeah. So that's avoidance. And you can see that. Yeah. So now what's your question about that?
Well, it just rose up for me kind of strongly. And
So breathe.
I don't know. It does have something to do with strength. In some way, I think when I'm getting to a place and I seem to cut myself off, maybe, you know.
So that withholding, that cutting off, that moving away from the relationship rather than staying open.
Or even an inquiry.
And even an inquiry.
I cut myself off.
Okay. That's a good catch. So you can see that is avoidance. Somebody inside saying, that's enough. We're not going there, or distracting, or cutting off. Yeah, that is avoidance of experience.
But it feels as well that I can't do anything about it. In other words, like it's already happening. I can't not avoid it.
Right. That's what I meant by instinctual. The instinctual is not thought about.
Okay.
It just comes up. It's happening.
All right.
The thing that what you can do there then, and this is what our method is to be aware of it. Oh, I just cut off, or something just shut down. Something just went away. Wait a minute. So being aware is what you can do there, because you're absolutely right. We can't, it's like the blink of an eye. You can't control You're blinking. You can't control your digestion. Our instinctual is
pretty strong. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And wants to survive. So if relationship is a kind of an area of danger for you, probably mm-hmm. based on very early experiences mm-hmm. when you got hurt in relationship to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's operative as you're wanting to understand what's holding back from my being a loving, open being,
mm-hmm.
which is your essential nature.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that answers my question, actually, was the instinctual part, I think.
So breathing into it and being aware of it, is that's exactly what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Rudolfo here?
Hi, Rudolfo. So this has been interesting. I'm drawn to want to watch Fox News or hear a conservative commentator for some reason, and I'm wondering about true nature is this anger that I feel of being powerful, and I wonder if that's my wanting to feel powerful, because when I can get self-righteous, then I can feel puffed up, and maybe that's not welcome in other areas of my life, that, you know, anger or something. I can be angry in the comfort of my own living room,
yes,
kind of thing. And so it's kind of curious. I was wondering if the whole is strength, and this explains why I want to keep on going in and seeing what Sean Hannity says or what Glenn Beck says or something like that.
Because you're going to then fight with it or think about it?
Yeah, because then I'll get angry and then I'll feel big.
And
I'm wondering if that's what you mean by the whole and the substitute of strength for lack of strength or something.
Yes, that behavior, that interest, that fight is a pseudo feeling of strength. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing real about it. It's contrived and it doesn't last long. I mean, tomorrow night you got to turn on the same commentator, you know, and get mad again and get pumped up again. So, yeah, you're beginning to see how that activity and that interaction is possibly a pseudo, it's not possibly, it's a pseudo feeling, and it's possible that you are cut off from strength in a particular way, and this is how you're getting it in a substitute way.
Right. Because I don't want to. I don't want to go find out what Ben Glenn Beck is saying.
Uh-huh.
Reading the paper or something like that, I'm drawn to what's that fucker saying now.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'll sit with it. But.
Yeah. So keep. Well, you don't have to sit with that. Uh-huh. Sit with the question about where is my strength? Where do I really feel strong?
Mm.
And when you go to Glenn Beck. And you let yourself get angry, really inquire, okay, so now, what about this anger? And mm-hmm. can I get the falseness of it?
Mm-hmm.
And then see what's underneath it. Okay. Keep asking, what's a half an inch underneath this?
Mm.
See where you go.
Nice. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Peter?
My response to the second question was, oh, this is the standard Diamond Heart paradoxical question that has no answer. What's right about avoiding experiencing my holes? And I was like, no, there's nothing right about this. There can be nothing right about this. One must experience one's holes in order to achieve integration and progress on the spiritual path and
towards self-realization and enlightenment and
all that subtext. So my question is, and I kind of know the answer.
So tell me the answer and I'll see if I can give you the question. Never mind.
Are holes a natural state of being? Yes. Should we expect that our work here is with the outcome of there not being holes anymore, or is it the acceptance of the holes that we have and recognizing them as part of our greater landscape?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, if we go all the way back, we know that when the child is born, it doesn't have holes. But it also doesn't have a personality or an ego at that point. So as we work through our defenses and what ties us all up in knots so we don't feel our emptiness and our whole, as we work through and understand those things and actually get to the whole and retrieve the aspect of essence that was lost, then there isn't a whole. The essence...
Is that a good thing?
Is that what?
Is that a good thing?
Well, what do you think? I mean,
yeah, I think
are you interested in your essential nature?
Well, yes. I mean, that was another trick question.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm reading that the subtext of all this is that holes are there to be explored and knowledge is there to be gained. I mean, true knowledge about ourselves. Integration is there to be achieved, I guess. And so in that sense, one could think of holes as kind of wells through which we can obtain knowledge about our true nature.
So Peter, where are you right now? Where are you? I want to get a feel for
it. I'm standing here, and I was realizing during the inquiry that kind of question comes up a lot. And I thought, wise people have carefully thought this question through, even though it does not appear to have a direct logical answer. So it must be that we are to inquire, and that it is the process of inquiry which is that thing which has true value in this exercise, because there does not seem to be a direct logical answer to this question.
I see. So where you are right now is up
here. So I get curious.
Yes.
I'm like, this kind of format keeps coming up. So the larger question is, are we to learn about our wholes so that we can reintegrate our souls so that the outcome will be no more wholes? In other words, kind of a return to grace, as it were, that primordial state in which we first came into the world without any wholes. I'm just curious.
I get that, yeah. Okay. When you actually have an experience of a whole, I think the answer to your question will be much more clear to you in your own experience. I hear your curiosity, and I hear that you're trying to figure this out so you know what you're doing and why you're doing what you're doing. So the...
Well, I know the answer to that question. I know that for me personally, when I have knowledge of a whole, that means that... for me at least, it's something that I've been avoiding, otherwise I would have recognized it was there a while ago.
Right.
And for me it represents something that I need to learn about myself.
Right.
So personally I have the answer to the question. It's like I have...
Well, but wait a minute, I think you've got partial answer. If you can see in your experience how you're avoiding a hole, and at some point you actually fall into the hole, you're going to have an experience. Something's going to happen to you. And that happening is really important. It may be painful, may be scary, it may be wonderful, but whatever it is, that experience is really important. And then how that unfolds brings about your understanding of what happened that cut you off from a particular aspect of essence. like maybe your strength or your will? What cut you off from an intuitive knowing in your belly? Whatever. And once you have that understanding, the aspect of essence comes back. It's there.
So in that sense, it really is that they are kind of wells from which to retrieve the connection with true nature.
That's a way you can look at it, you know, because that's a metaphor. It's, again, a substitute. It's trying to understand with your mind something that really only works for you if you're willing to have the experience.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All the way over in the corner.
Hi, I'm Annette.
Annette.
As I was doing this inquiry, one of the things that arose for me was a question around how, if you are working spiritually, you begin to distinguish a preference from avoiding experiencing a whole. And it came up around joy and experience and creating. So in what I know is that when I was younger, I think I, with volition, tried to create experiences of pleasure and fun, and mm-hmm. I don't think that's so true anymore. Mm-hmm. And I understand, looking back, and the value of getting to be this age is you have a lot of looking back you can do. But my question around that isn't there in the particularity of one's essential self certain preferences that are distinct from avoiding the experience of a whole that arise as you're working? Or is that a delusion I'm enjoying at the moment?
One of the qualities of presence is that it's allowing. There's nothing excluded. Nothing. So preferences come about when there is a self that thinks it's separate from being. And it has preferences then.
Can you say that last part again?
Allowing is a quality of being. Preferences come about when the soul identifies itself as a separate being. Like, true nature's over there, and I'm over here. And I have my preferences. So it's not to make preferences wrong, but it's to see that in beingness, all is included. The freedom of being is a freedom from preferences, a freedom of desire. There's none of that. It's open and vast, allowing presence.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll take one more and then go to lunch. In the middle right here.
Hi, it's Jenny. I just got confused by your answer because and maybe it's just the word preferences. Because I think like wants are, you know, your heart wants, or, you know, that's part of you. I think that's good. I mean, I think having needs in a way, or having like you're going to have your want is wrong. But I think having
a want is wrong.
I think it's good.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think having a want, my heart wants something that I feel good. Now, being attached to getting it feels bad. I understand that. But to me, you know, I'm just saying, feeling-wise, when I use the word want, it feels good. And so I'd like you to just comment on that. Like, you know, maybe it's just your heart wanting joy or...
Well, if your heart is wanting joy, then joy is missing. It's like if you want a pizza, you're not sitting in front of a pizza.
Right. So wants are good, then.
So there's nothing wrong with want. We're not talking about good or bad here. But if joy is arising, then that's a feeling of true nature that the soul is experiencing in the moment, not having to do anything to get it or earn it. It's natural. It's inherent in that. That's fine, yes. However, our wants can point to places where, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but it may point us to something missing. If I'm wanting joy, okay, so where is my joy? Where is joy?
Just wanting joy connects me with my joy.
All right, so that's an experience where your heart opens, you let yourself want joy, and then suddenly your joy is arising.
Right, so for me, wanting is good, because that happens to me a lot, actually.
Well, it's not a question of good or bad. If that's the sequence of events, heart's there, heart wants joy, joy shows up, that's not dealing with holes. That's an experience of you being present in the moment and knowing what your heart is open to. The heart longs for the joy, and the joy arises. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. That's just what it is. That's not really what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's just really no judgment on that.
Not at all, okay. No, it would be more like, okay, I'm wanting joy. I recognize it's not here. I find I can't give it to myself. So I say to myself, okay, so what can I do or who can I be with that will give me some enjoyment?
Okay, that's different.
That's very different, yeah. Where you're talking about is the presence of joy arising and you're right there and you perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very different.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, so it's a little after one. Let's go to lunch now and be back at 2:30. Yeah. 2:45? Oh, okay, you want to be more generous, I guess, huh? Okay, 2:45, we can be back from lunch. Thank you. Oh, yes, we need to do the bell. So sit tight for a minute. Take a breath. Sense your body. So we leave in connection with ourselves as most as we can.